Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From Toronto, this is Democracy Now!
31 years after the first COP on climate change, global CO2 emissions have increased by at least 65%. It could be said that we have failed, but we would also like to think that we are precisely at a moment of opportunity when the window has not yet closed.
Environment ministers from more than 50 countries are gathering in Santa Marta, Colombia, for a major summit on transitioning away from fossil fuels. But the United States, Russia, and China are skipping the summit. We'll speak to South African climate activist Kumi Naidu, president of the Fossil Fuel Treaty Initiative. Plus, as we broadcast from Toronto, we'll speak to Avi Lewis, recently elected head of the NDP, the New Democratic Party, Canada's Progressive Party, after campaigning on a platform embracing eco-socialism and expanding publicly funded projects.
A network of public providers for food, phones, and internet. A public housing developer and public construction companies to build millions of non-market homes.
But first, we look at how the Trump administration's moving to make it easier to deport people with DACA. That's Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the Obama-era program that granted deportation relief to hundreds of thousands of immigrants who came to the U.S. as children so they could obtain work authorization and not live in the shadows. We'll speak to Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez of Chicago. Her husband was a DACA recipient. She's the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today we're broadcasting from Canada. Iran's offered the United States a new proposal to end its control over the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for the U.S. lifting its blockade of Iranian ports while suspending its threat to resume bombing. Axios reports President Trump's expected to hold a meeting today in the Situation Room with his top national security and foreign policy team to discuss the stalemate in the negotiations and potential next steps. Several news outlets report Trump does not appear open to Iran's proposal, which would postpone talks over Iran's nuclear program to a later date. At the United Nations, diplomats from dozens of countries Monday demanded the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, while a resolution calling for reopening the waterway was blocked by China and Russia. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned of a global food emergency after the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran triggered a crisis that sent the cost of fuel, fertilizer, and other commodities soaring.
The economic shock has been immediate, and everyone is paying the price. Acute volatility in energy and commodity markets, surging transport and insurance costs, and the worst supply chain disruption since COVID-19 and the war in Ukraine. These pressures are cascading into empty fuel tanks, empty shelves, and empty plates.
On Saturday, the Iranian Red Crescent Society says it submitted evidence to the International Criminal Court documenting U.S.-Israeli war crimes. The IRCS estimates more than 132,000 civilian structures were bombed across Iran, including hospitals, apartment buildings, universities, research facilities, and bridges. Meanwhile, Iran's retaliation for U.S. and Israeli attacks caused billions of dollars of damage to U.S. military bases and other assets across the Persian Gulf region, with the damage inflicted far worse than the Trump administration's publicly admitted. That's according to a report by NBC News, which reports Iran struck runways, high-end radar systems, dozens of aircraft, warehouses, command headquarters, aircraft hangars, and satellite communications infrastructure at a cost of up to $5 billion to repair. On Monday, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz said he had become disillusioned with the U.S. and Israel over the war in Iran and said the Trump administration is being outwitted and humiliated.
The Americans clearly have no strategy. And the problem with conflicts like this is always that you don't just have to go in, you also have to get out again. We saw that all too painfully in Afghanistan for 20 years. We saw it in Iraq. An entire nation is being humiliated by the Iranian state leadership.
Israel's military has launched attacks across southern Lebanon after it issued new warnings to residents to evacuate more than a dozen villages and towns and travel northwards immediately or face death. It's the latest violation of Israel's ceasefire agreement with Lebanon, which was officially extended last Thursday. On Monday, Hezbollah chief Naim Qassem issued a statement condemning the Lebanese government's direct talks with Israel, citing Israel's occupation of Lebanon's southern territories and its persistent attacks. In response, Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, threatened to burn Hezbollah and all of Lebanon, unquote. Palestinian municipal elections were held in Gaza's Deir el-Balah Saturday, marking the first elections of any kind in the besieged strip since 2006. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, loyalists of the Palestinian Authority's President Mahmoud Abbas won most races, running unchallenged in many seats. Candidates in Gaza for the Palestinian Authority secured 6 of 15 contested seats. Hamas boycotted the West Bank race and did not formally nominate candidates in Gaza. Voter turnout in Gaza reached just 23%, while turnout in the West Bank was 56%. This is Mohammed Al-Hassanat, a first-time voter in Gaza.
I was happy today because I was able to vote and cast my ballot in the elections. I was surprised, though, that the ballot box was made of wood and the pen was a felt-tip pen, not official ink. Despite that, we are still able to vote and elect and face all challenges. We want to vote. We want to rebuild Gaza from scratch, and we want to rebuild it.
A former top State Department official under President Biden has accused Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of committing genocide in Gaza with U.S. participation. Wendy Sherman served as Deputy Secretary of State until her retirement in July 2023. She spoke with Michelle Hussein of Bloomberg Podcasts.
I think that it is critical that Israel remain an ally of the United States and that we protect the right of a Jewish state. But I also believe that the Prime Minister has led us down a road, and we have been part of it, that has, in essence, created a genocide in Gaza.
More than a dozen Biden administration officials resigned their posts to protest U.S. policy toward Israel and its treatment of Palestinians. To see our interviews with many of them, go to democracynow.org. In Sudan, human rights workers say 6 people were killed Monday when a Sudanese army drone struck a camp for displaced people in the western Darfur region. Dozens more were wounded in the attack, which destroyed several homes and set off panic among displaced families. In El Fasher, the last major city in Darfur to fall to the UAE-backed paramilitary rapid support forces, the Sudan Doctors Network reports over 1,400 civilians, over 900 military personnel, and 20 doctors are being held in dire conditions in detention facilities. The RSF is accused of committing ethnically motivated killings and field executions inside the detention centers, which have also seen a cholera outbreak since February. Meanwhile, in East Darfur's Labato, a measles outbreak has killed approximately 70 people, infected around 1,000 others since March as the healthcare system has collapsed. According to the UN, nearly 30 34 million people, about 65% of the population, are in urgent need of humanitarian support, and famine has been confirmed in Darfur and the Kordofans. This is Saha Musa, a displaced Sudanese woman.
Since we arrived in Tawila a month ago, we've been suffering from a severe lack of services, except for water, which we draw from wells. We have no other services here, and we desperately need assistance. Our children aren't receiving an education, and I'm a nurse, but I can't find work.
Virginia's Supreme Court heard oral arguments Monday on the legality of redistricting referendum that voters approved last week. The redrawn Democratic map could result in the party holding 10 of Virginia's 11 congressional seats, up from 6. Meanwhile, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis released a new congressional map Monday that seeks to create 4 additional Republican-leaning seats in Florida. It comes as the Supreme Court formally reinstated Monday a redrawn Texas electoral map, allowing Republicans to flip as many as 5 House seats currently held by Democrats. Justices at the U.S. Supreme Court appeared split on Monday over whether a federal law that regulates the sale and marketing of pesticides preempts state-level lawsuits against manufacturers. The case centers on whether the federal government or state should decide what warning labels should be put on herbicides. Its main plaintiff is a Missouri man who sued Monsanto and its parent company Bayer in 2019 over its popular weed killer glyphosate, marketed as Roundup. He alleged 2 decades of exposure to the chemical caused him to develop blood cancer. A jury found Bayer had failed to warn him of the risks associated with Roundup and awarded him $1.25 million in damages. The Trump administration, which has called Roundup safe, is siding with Bayer in its challenge at the Supreme Court. If successful, thousands of lawsuits alleging cancers caused by Roundup could be thrown out. More than 600 workers at Google have signed a letter to CEO Sundar Pichai demanding he refuse to allow Google's AI tools to be used by the Pentagon for classified work. The employees cited concerns about lethal autonomous weapons and mass surveillance, writing that, quote, the only way to guarantee that Google does not become associated with such harms is to reject any classified workloads. Unquote. Google's reportedly pursuing a Pentagon deal similar to the one OpenAI struck after the Pentagon's public clash with Anthropic. Meanwhile, protesters gathered outside an Oakland courthouse Monday as jury selection wrapped up in the trial pitting Elon Musk against OpenAI and its CEO, Sam Altman. A California ballot initiative to impose a one-time 5% tax on billionaires' assets has gathered more than 1.5 million signatures, well above the 870,000 needed to qualify for the November ballot. The measure, backed by the SEIU, Service Employees International Union, would use the revenue to backfill federal Medicaid cuts signed by President Trump. Silicon Valley executives have poured $93 million into defeating the ballot initiative. Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin, has emerged as the measure's leading opponent, spending $57 million against it and relocating to Nevada before a December 31st deadline to escape the billionaire tax. The New York Times reports that at a holiday party last December, Brin cornered Governor Gavin Newsom and demanded he oppose the measure. The following month, Governor Newsom publicly pledged to defeat it. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump welcomed King Charles and Queen Camilla to Washington, D.C. on Monday. It's Charles' first visit to the U.S. since he ascended to the throne in 2022. He's due to address a joint session of Congress this afternoon. His speech comes after Trump threatened to cancel a U.S.-UK trade deal, mocked the Royal Navy, and insulted U.K. Prime Minister Keir Starmer as weak and cowardly and a loser with no future, unquote. During his U.S. visit, King Charles will not meet with survivors of sexual abuse and human trafficking by Jeffrey Epstein, despite a request by California Congressmember Ro Khanna for a private meeting. Charles' brother, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, was stripped of his royal title, Prince, and arrested in February over accusations of misconduct in public office over his close ties to Epstein. 31-year-old Cole Thomas Allen of Torrance, California, was charged Monday with the attempted assassination of President Trump following Saturday's shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Allen allegedly charged a security checkpoint at the Washington Hilton armed with a shotgun and pistol. A Secret Service officer was shot but survived due to a bullet-resistant vest. An FBI affidavit revealed Allen had reserved a room at the hotel weeks before the dinner and traveled across country by train from California to Chicago to Washington. In an email sent to family just before the attack, he referred to himself as a friendly federal assassin. He faces up to life in prison. At the White House, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt blamed leftists for the attack.
Those who constantly, falsely label and slander the president as a fascist, as a threat to democracy, and compare him to Hitler to score political points are fueling this kind of violence. The left-wing cult of hatred against the president and all of those who support him and work for him has gotten multiple people hurt and killed, and it almost did so again this weekend.
And First Lady Melania Trump's joined her husband in calling on ABC to fire late-night comedian Jimmy Kimmel. Following the gunfire that erupted outside the White House Correspondents Association dinner on Saturday, the First Lady objected to Kimmel's joke last week, before the shooting took place, that she had a glow like an expectant widow, unquote. On Monday evening, Kimmel pushed back.
I've been very vocal for many years speaking out against gun violence in particular, but I understand that the First Lady had a stressful experience over the weekend, and probably every weekend is pretty stressful in that house. And also, I agree that hateful and violent rhetoric is something we should reject. I do, and I think a great place to start to dial that back would be to have a conversation with your husband about it.
This comes after CBS last year canceled The Late Show with Stephen Colbert under pressure from President Trump. His show will end in a few weeks. And after ABC temporarily suspended Kimmel's show last September over his comments about the assassination of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in Toronto, Canada, with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show with Trump's repeated attacks on DACA. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which has granted deportation relief and work permits to an estimated 500,000 immigrants who came to the United States as children. The targeting of people with DACA has intensified under Trump's second term, with nearly 300 DACA recipients detained last year. Of that group, at least 174 have been deported, many after living nearly all their lives in the United States. Maria de Jesus Estrada Juarez is among them. She came to the U.S. at the age of 15 and had been living here in the United States for over 20 years when the Trump administration detained her in February despite having DACA. She was taken during her green card appointment and deported to Mexico within 24 hours. A judge later deemed her deportation illegal and ordered her return to the United States in March. Juarez spoke to PBS News from her home in California earlier this month.
We show up to the appointment at USCIS in Sacramento. We walk into the office. We have my interview. At the end of my interview, the interview agent told me that he needed to speak to his supervisor. And sooner than I know, they knock on the door and I got arrested. And I was told that I was being detained and I was going to get deported back to Mexico. I know that the Deferred Action DACA, it protects people that they brought into the country when they were children for deportation. That's what the DACA program was created for.
DACA was enacted by the Obama administration in 2012 and has been at the center of ongoing contentious litigation with advocates worried about the program's future. Well, a new decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals, that's BIA, may make it easier for the Trump administration to continue deporting DACA recipients. The new precedent decision by a three-judge panel outlined that DACA no longer guarantees protection from deportation for hundreds of thousands of people in the program. The BIA operates within the Department of Justice. The decision came in the case of Catalina Sochil Santiago, a DACA recipient and longtime immigration rights advocate who was released from an ICE jail last October after about 2 months in detention. For more, we go to Capitol Hill, where we're joined by Congressmember Delia Ramirez. She is a Democrat from Illinois, fighting to bring legislation to the floor to protect DACA. Her husband is a former DACA recipient himself. Congressmember Ramirez is the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Congressmember Ramirez. If you can talk about the significance of the BIA decision and overall the Trump administration deporting over 100 DACA recipients.
Look, this decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals is a very concerning decision because, as you just mentioned, deferred action for children arrivals, the purpose of that was to protect these children from being deported. And the idea that now 500,000 or so DACA recipients who've had deferred action are now at the whim or concerned that if they get in fact stopped or if they go in to a check-in or some sort of procedure with immigration that they too can now be deported should be concerning all of us. I mean, these are folks that have been here, Amy, you know this, since they were two or since they were 14, like my husband. They don't know any other world, any other country than the United States of America. And all of a sudden, that deferred action, that protection that was afforded through this program no longer applies because of this panel of three judges who are ruling under whatever Donald Trump wants them to do.
And Representative, the Washington Post is reporting that, quote, more than 140 new deportation judges have been appointed following the DOJ's firing of 100 immigration judges since Trump took office. Your view of how Trump is trying to completely remake the immigration judicial system?
Look, he's weaponizing the court system. He is firing judges for doing their job, for practicing what they have taken on in their oath as a judge, following procedure, and then he's replacing them, you know, one would call to question, with judges who are more concerned with being loyal to the president so they can keep their job than actually following the law that they swore to upkeep. That's really concerning. Look, I've done a number of court visits to monitor what's happening in the courtrooms, and oftentimes what you're seeing is judges who are just rushing through cases, especially these merit cases, so that they can speed up these deportations of people seeking refuge in this country. It calls to question, what does our Department of Justice system truly look like when there is no justice? Because now you're hiring judges who are loyal to the president and not loyal to the law.
At the same time, though, there was a federal appeals court ruling in Washington, D.C., that President Trump's claims that there's an invasion of the United States as a reason for shutting down asylum requests at the U.S.-Mexico border, that court has ruled that that's unlawful. I'm wondering your response, given the fact that Trump issued that proclamation on his first day back in office.
Yeah, no, look, I want to tell you, judges and the courts are in a really difficult position right now. I mean, you're talking about immigration judges who have been serving for 15, 20, 25 years now being called to question because they are following the law, they're following the procedure that's been put in place by this Congress, right, by the Constitution. And so when you hear the president use invasion or the Department of Homeland Security disguise of protecting us from domestic terrorism to be able to shoot people or justify the shooting of Alex Preti or Rene Good or Silverio Villegas, you know that we have entered dangerous territory. At the same time, I have to make sure, Juan, that I say say this clearly, this Congress also has a responsibility. We've had the Dream and Promise Act here for a number of years, and we have not been able to pass it through both chambers. Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley just recently used a discharge petition process to be able to extend protections for TPS holders from Haiti. We have to do the same thing here in Congress to finally bring the Dream and Promise Act to the floor to be able to bring the protections to these DACA recipients that should have already had a pathway to citizenship a long time ago.
I also wanted to ask you about a particular immigration facility, the ICE North Lake facility in Baldwin, Michigan. There's a hunger and labor strike going on there by the detainees. Could you talk about what you know about that and what you're calling for?
You know, look, as you know, it's been very difficult for members of Congress to conduct these oversight visits. In many cases, they continue to say you need to send an email. They've denied entrance, which, again, is a violation, right, of the authority that's been afforded to us through the appropriations process. What is happening there is unconscionable. I have a bill to melt ICE, and what it does, in fact, is ends detention. What you're seeing around the country, whether it's the conditions that children are being treated inside detention and families and individuals, what is in their food, the conditions that they're sleeping in these private detention centers, we have to address it. It's why this bill is so important to me, and we're calling more members of Congress to join it. It ends detention, it disrupts enforcement, and then redirects all those billions of dollars used for private detention to really incarcerate people in these what feel like concentration camps back into the communities that have been impacted by ICE enforcement. It's why we call the bill the Melt ICE bill. But we should all be looking at doing more oversight at these facilities, especially these private facilities that get to do whatever they'd like so that they can maximize their profit. And in many cases, you have seen the corruption between employees of DHS and the contracts afforded to these detention facilities.
Congressmember Delia Ramirez, as we begin to wrap up, you have motioned to subpoena the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, White House Border Czar, Tom Homan, to answer questions before the House Committee on Homeland Security. What do you want to ask them, and is this going to go forward in a Republican House?
Look, Amy, they're trying to shove a reconciliation bill down our throat in the House of Representatives to get authority for over $140 billion, although they're saying that they only need to appropriate $70 billion, but they want authorization for $140 billion. The idea that Tom Homan and Stephen Miller, the architects of these operations, have not come before the Committee of Jurisdiction is unconscionable. I mean, that is part of the process and responsibility. You're asking for more money. You won't even respond to us about the things that have happened with the money that you have already been afforded. And so I'm going to continue to push for a subpoena. Democrats are going to continue to push back. It is our responsibility, because how do you ask for more money without actually coming before the committees and responding on the questions of corruption, of shootings, of the fact that you have agents who have been weaponized around the country, harming people, children, people dying in detention, and the list goes on, which is why I'm going to continue to ask for that subpoena. And Gabarino should do his job as the chair of Homeland Security to demand that these members of the cabinet, Tom Homan, come before the committee, if they have nothing to hide, to come to respond to the committee.
Finally, very quickly, President Trump is trying to use the attempted attack on the White House Correspondents' Dinner to end the Democratic Congress members' hold on money for ICE, saying that, you know, from Secret Service to TSA, it's affected them. Your response?
Look, let me be very clear. Secret Service is part of law enforcement, and they have never not been paid. While TSA agents have not been paid, administrative positions within DHS have not been paid, the Secret Service continues to get paid even during the shutdown. The president, as always, continues to try to spew misinformation in order to get away with what he wants, his ballroom, or no oversight, or to continue to operate as if there are no other co-equal branches of government. But it's really important for me to note, the Secret Service continues to get paid. Their funding has not been interrupted.
Congressmember Delia Ramirez of Chicago, fighting to bring a bill to the floor to protect DACA. Her husband was a DACA recipient himself. Coming up as we broadcast from Toronto, we'll speak to Avi Lewis, recently elected head of the NDP, the New Democratic Party, after campaigning on a platform embracing eco-socialism and expanding publicly funded projects. Stay with us.
Yes, these stars collide in just